Chapter 5. We were so hungry that it hurt to drink water and we felt cramps in our guts. It was as though something were eating the insides of our stomachs. Our lips became parched and our joints weakened and ached. I began to feel my ribs when I touched my sides. We didn't know where else to get food. The one cassava farm that we ravaged didn't last long. Birds and animals such as rabbits were nowhere to be seen. We became irritable and sat apart from each other, as if sitting together made us hungrier. One evening, we actually chased a little boy who was eating two boiled ears of corn by himself. He was about 5 years old and was enjoying the corn that he held in both hands, taking turns biting each ear. We didn't say a word or even look at each other. Rather, we rushed on the boy at the same time, and before he knew what was happening, we had taken the corn from him. We shared it among the six of us and ate our little portions while the boy cried and ran to his parents. The boy's parents didn't confront us about the incident. I guess they knew that six boys would jump on their son for 2 ears of corn only if they were desperately hungry. Later in the evening, the boy's mother gave each of us an ear of corn. I felt guilty about it for a few minutes, but in our position there wasn't much time for remorse. I don't know the name of the village that we were in and didn't bother to ask, since I was busy trying to survive the everyday obstacles. We didn't know the names of other towns and villages and how to get there. So hunger drove us back to Matrujong again. It was dangerous, but hunger made us not care that much. It was summertime, the dry season, and the grassland had grown yellowish. A fresh green forest engulfed it. We were in the middle of the grassland walking in single file, our shirts on our shoulders or heads, when suddenly 3 rebels rose from behind the dry grasses and pointed their guns at Jabrila, who was in the front. They cocked their guns, and one of them placed the muzzle of his gun under Jabrila's chin. "He is scared like a soaked monkey," the rebel laughingly told his companions. As the other two walked past me, I avoided eye contact by putting my head down. The younger rebel raised my head with his bayonet, still in its scabbard. While he was looking at me sternly, he took the bayonet from its scabbard and attached it at the muzzle of his gun. I trembled so hard that my lips shook. He smiled without emotion. The rebels, none of whom were older than 21, started walking us back to a village we had passed. One was dressed in a sleeveless army shirt and jeans, his head tied with a red cloth. The other two were dressed in jean jackets and pants, wearing baseball hats backwards and new Adidas sneakers. All 3 wore a lot of fancy watches on both wrists. All these things had been taken from people by force or looted from houses and shops. The rebels said a lot of things as we walked. Whatever they said didn't sound friendly. I couldn't hear their words because all I could think about was death. I struggled to avoid fainting. As we approached the village, 2 of the rebels ran ahead. 6 of us and 1 rebel, I thought to myself. But he had a semi-automatic machine gun and a long belt of bullets wrapped around him. He made us walk in 2 lines of 3 with our hands on our heads. He was behind us aiming his gun at our heads. And at some point he said, "If any of you makes a move, I will kill everyone. So don't even breathe too hard or it might be your last." He laughed and his voice echoed in the distant forest. I prayed that my friends and brother wouldn't make any sudden moves or even try to scratch an itch. The back of my head was getting warm, as if expecting a bullet any time. When we got to the village, the 2 rebels who had run ahead had gathered everyone who was there. There were over 15 people, mostly young boys, some girls and a few adults. They made us all stand in the compound of a house that was closer to the bush. It was getting dark. The rebels took out their big flashlights and placed them on top of the rice-pounding mortars so that they could see everyone. While we stood there under gunpoint, an old man who had escaped from Matrujong was heard crossing a creaky wooden bridge leading to the village. While we watched, the youngest rebel walked toward the old man and waited for him at the foot of the bridge. He was placed at gunpoint as soon as he crossed over and brought in front of us. The man was probably in his 60s, but looked weak. His face was wrinkled from hunger and fear. The rebel pushed the old man to the ground, put a gun to his head, and ordered him to get up. On trembling knees, the old man managed to stand. The rebels laughed at him and made us laugh with them by pointing their guns at us. I laughed loudly, but I was crying internally, and my legs and hands trembled. I clenched my fists, but that made the trembling worse. All the captives stood at gunpoint, watching as the rebels proceeded to interrogate the old man. "Why did you leave Matrujong?" a rebel asked while examining his bayonet. He measured the length of his knife with his fingers and then held it against the old man's neck. "It looks like a perfect fit," he motioned, driving the bayonet through the old man's neck. "Now are you going to answer my question?" The veins on his forehead stood out as his fierce red eyes watched the trembling face of the old man, whose eyelids were shaking uncontrollably. Before the war, a young man wouldn't have dared to talk to anyone older in such a rude manner. We grew up in a culture that demanded good behavior from everyone, and especially from the young. Young people were required to respect their elders and everyone in the community. "I left town to look for my family," the old man said in a frightened voice, as he managed to catch his breath. The rebel, with the semi-automatic machine gun, who had been standing against a tree smoking a cigarette, furiously walked toward the old man and pointed his gun between the old man's legs. "You left Matrujong because you don't like us," he put his gun on the old man's forehead and continued. "You left because you are against our cause as freedom fighters, right?" The old man closed his eyes tightly and began to sob. "What cause?" I thought. I used the only freedom that I had then, my thought. They couldn't see it. While the interrogation went on, one of the rebels painted RUF on all the walls of the houses in the village. He was the sloppiest painter I've ever seen. I don't think he even knew his alphabet. Rather, he only knew what R, U, and F looked like. When he was done painting, he walked up to the old man and placed his gun to the old man's head. "Do you have any last words to say?" The old man, at this point, was unable to speak. His lips trembled, but he couldn't get a word out. The rebel pulled the trigger, and like lightning, I saw the spark of fire that came from the muzzle. I turned my face to the ground. My knees started trembling, and my heartbeat grew faster and louder. When I looked back, the old man was circling around like a dog trying to catch a fly on its tail. He kept screaming, "My head, my brains." The rebels laughed at him. Finally, he stopped and slowly raised his hands toward his face like a person hesitant to look in a mirror. "I can see, I can hear," he cried out and fainted. It turned out that the rebels hadn't shot him, but had fired at close range near his head. They were very amused at the old man's reaction. The rebels now faced us and announced that they were going to select some people among us to be recruited, as it was the sole reason for their patrol. They ordered everyone to line up, men, women, even children younger than I. They walked up and down the line trying to make eye contact with people. First, they chose Kalilu, and then myself, then a few others. Each person that was chosen was asked to stand in a different line facing the previous one. Junior wasn't chosen, and I stood facing him on the other side of the crowd, on my way to becoming a rebel. I looked at him, but he avoided eye contact, putting his head down. It seemed as if our worlds were different now, and our connection was breaking. Fortunately, for some reason, the rebels decided to do a fresh pick. One of them said that they had chosen wrongly, since most of us who had been chosen were trembling, and that meant we were sissies. "We want strong recruits, not weak ones." The rebel pushed us back to the other side of the crowd. Junior edged next to me. He gave me a soft poke. I looked up at him, and he nodded and rubbed my head. "Stand still for a final pick," one of the rebels screamed. Junior stopped rubbing my head. During the second pick, Junior was chosen. The rest of us weren't needed, so they escorted us to the river, followed by the chosen ones. Sweeping an arm in our direction, one of the rebels announced, "We are going to initiate all of you by killing these people in front of you. We have to do this to show you blood and make you strong. You will never see any of these people again, unless you believe in life after death." He punched his chest with his fist and laughed. I turned around and looked at Junior, whose eyes were red because he was trying to hold back his tears. He clenched his fist to keep his hands from trembling. I began to cry quietly and all of a sudden felt dizzy. One of the boys vomited. A rebel pushed him to join us by smashing him in the face with the butt of his gun. The boy's face was bleeding as we continued on. "Don't worry, guys. The next killing is on you," another rebel commented and laughed. At the river, they made us kneel and put our hands behind our heads. Suddenly, loud gunshots not far away from the village were heard. Two of the rebels ran for cover behind the nearest trees. The other lay flat on the ground, aiming his gun toward the direction of the sound. "Do you think they are..." The rebel on the ground was interrupted by more gunshots. The rebels began to fire back. Everyone scattered, running for their lives into the bushes. The rebels noticed what had happened and fired after us. I ran as fast as I could deep into the bush and lay flat on the ground behind a log. I could hear the gunshots coming closer, so I began to crawl farther into the bush. A bullet hit a tree directly above my head and fell on the ground next to me. I halted and held my breath. From where I lay, I saw the red bullets flying through the forest and into the night. I could hear my heartbeat and I started breathing heavily, so I covered my nose to control it. Some people were captured and I could hear them crying from whatever pain was being inflicted upon them. The sharp, harsh cry of a woman filled the forest, and I felt the fear in her voice piercing through my veins, causing my teeth to feel somehow sour. I crawled farther into the bush and found a place under a tree, where I lay for hours without moving. The rebels were still in the village, angrily cursing and shooting their guns. At some point, they pretended to be gone, and someone who had escaped went back to the village. They captured him, and I could hear them beating him. A few minutes later, gunshots were heard, followed by thick smoke that rose toward the sky. The forest was lit up by the fire that was set in the village. It had been almost an hour, and the rebels' gunshot had gradually faded. As I lay under the tree thinking of what to do next, I heard whispers from behind. At first I was afraid, but then I recognized the voices. It was Junior and my friends. They had somehow ended up running in the same direction. I was still a little hesitant to call them, so I waited just to be absolutely sure. "I think they are gone," I heard Junior whisper. I was so certain at this point that my voice involuntarily left me. "Junior, Talui, Kaloko, Jibrila, Kalilu, is that you?" I spoke quickly. They got quieter. "Junior, can you hear me?" I called out again. "Yes, we are here by the rotten log," he replied. They guided me toward them. We then crawled closer to the village to get to the path. Once we found the path, we started walking back toward the village where we had spent most of our hunger days. Junior and I exchanged a look, and he gave me that smile he had held back when I was about to face death. That night's journey was very quiet. None of us spoke. I knew we were walking, but I couldn't feel my feet touching the ground. When we got to the village, we sat around the fire until dawn. Not a word was said. Everyone seemed to be in a different world or seemed to be pondering something. The following morning, we started speaking to each other as if awakened from a nightmare or a dream that had given us a different take on life and the situation we were in. We decided to leave the village the next day and go somewhere safe, somewhere far away from where we were. We had no idea where we would go or even how to get to a safe place, but we were determined to find one. During that day, we washed our clothes. We had no soap, so we just soaked them and put them out in the sun to dry while we sat naked in a nearby bush, waiting for them to be ready. We had agreed to leave early in the morning of the next day.